Telecast.
Hi, I'm Justin Crosby, and welcome to another Telecast. What are the world's top TV markets and how much are they worth? On this week's show, we'll answer that question, and I'm delighted to be joined by Richard Middleton, editor of Television Business International, as we count down the global TV industry top 10. Thanks for joining me, Richard. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Justin. Thank you. Lovely to be here in your studio. And yeah, we're in the midst of London TV screenings week, so busy, busy. But yeah, good to take some time out and come to chat to you.
It's a busy time for the industry, isn't it? The whole world's TV markets, or certainly the buyers, are coming to London and deciding essentially what we're going to be all watching next year.
Yeah, they're all flocking in. It's a busy period at the start of the year. We've got lots of markets out in Miami at the start of the year, and then it all kicks off across the Atlantic. Coming to London, buyers from all over the world, as you say, coming in. And I think we've got more distributors selling content than ever before. Yeah, it's a really busy time of year. There's events over at BAFTA, lots of events up in Soho as well. Buyers traipsing between one and the other, being fed popcorn and all sorts to keep them in their seats. So yeah, we're trying to grab them and find out the intel, and all the distributors are trying to sell them shows. So yeah, busy, busy.
All right. Well, have a look on Television Business International. That's tbivision.com, and you'll be able to see all of the news that's coming out of that this week. So before we start our countdown, am I right in saying that the TV industry has become more global than at any time?
I think that is fair to say, yeah. We've seen, especially since the advent of the streamers, I think it's probably fair to sort of start from that point. We've seen a real interest in international drama, especially traveling the world. We've seen Korean dramas go global. We've seen Spanish dramas traveling all over. We've seen international formats being remade. This was a trend that was happening previously, but it's definitely increased since the streamers have come into the game. And all we're seeing now is that trend increasing. There's global communities that have popped up. We've got people really into anime. They're all over the world, but all of those people are really watching that content and now able to access it in ways that they weren't previously. And that's sort of evolving the industry as a whole. And certainly we're seeing a lot more internationalisation, I think, of the industry, certainly.
And we all know that the UK TV industry is struggling, and we also know that most other places are too. Maybe not everywhere. Do you think in total we're seeing the global market growing or shrinking right now?
We have some data we'll be talking about later from Omdia, which is part of Informa, as is TBI. It sort of shows that the revenues are increasing, not dramatically, but they're increasing. I mean, there's different things at play, certainly. Over the last couple of years, we've seen cord cutting, especially in the States, and that's really impacting the amount of money that's going into the industry. And a lot of the effects we're seeing in the UK, but a lot of the effects we're seeing all over the world, ultimately derive from that shift in consumption pattern, where people are moving from paying quite a lot for pay TV, not just in the US, but Brazil, Germany, there's all sorts of places that there is quite high pay TV uptake. Some of those markets are transitioning to streaming quicker than others. And we're seeing the evolution, essentially, of the TV industry from watching on TV and watching linear broadcast to watching on-demand streaming. And the returns so far on streaming haven't yet made up for the returns that were in place from pay TV and linear. And I think it's fair to say also, I mean, especially the last 18 months, 12 months perhaps, we've seen, some macroeconomic effects at the end of the day. There's only so much the TV industry can do. We're seeing real tight advertising squeezes. Broadcasters like Channel 4, ITV have spoken about that in the UK. ProSieben in Germany has certainly been affected by it. Pretty much most advertising markets are run. It's not a great time to rely on advertising for your income, unless you're on social media, on Google, or if you're one of the sort of Meta players. And that's impacting how much money is coming into the industry, and that drips down to producers, to everybody on the ground. It makes for a tough environment, I think it's fair to say.
Well, I think that's a $1 billion question, isn't it? Whether that money will ever come back. The money that's gone for those social media platforms, whether it'll come back to TV. Probably not, I think is the viewpoint. But before we start our global TV market rundown, we should say that total revenue, in terms of the figures that we're talking about here, is derived from TV advertising, pay TV, online subscription, and public revenue. And as we say, thank you to Omdia for giving us these stats. So let's get right into it with the 10th biggest TV market in the world. Richard, which country is in 10th position?
So in 10th position, we've got Italy. Italy is, as lots of European guys will know, it's a real hotbed of scripted, especially. Lots of scripted product coming out of there. It's an $11 billion market. So predominantly pay TV is big there. So we've got players like Mediaset for Europe, a really big national broadcaster in Rai. They have been doing lots of interesting co-productions. They're part of an alliance across Europe with ZDF and France Television. So they've been using some of their income to invest in scripted productions. So we've had some interesting shows coming out of that. We've also had, there's a big pay TV operator there, Media for Europe, with Mediaset there. And they are investing again in sports rights, but also in scripted and unscripted as well. But we've also seen Sky come into the market. They've done some interesting moves. There's been HBO shows, co-productions. My Brilliant Friend, for example, was shot there. Some really great production companies, Wildside, Cattleya. They've done some shows that have really travelled well. Gomorrah, for example, over the past 10, 15 years, that's really made marks internationally and drawn people in again. It's kind of made people aware of what's going on in Italy and the shows that are coming out of that part of the world.
All right. Well, as you say, a country famed for its cinema, but obviously has a decent-sized TV market as well. Who have we got at number nine?
Number nine, Justin, we have Brazil with 14.8 billion. So, yeah, Brazil, fascinating market. Portuguese speaking, of course. So in terms of exports, that's trickier. It can't export quite as much as it would like to. But it's dominated really by, on the pay TV side and the broadcast side, by Globo, which is a sprawling company, major media operator in Brazil. Has huge studios. Anyone who ever gets the chance to visit Rio should go and look up. If you're into TV, at least go and look at Globo Studios. They're launched some new ones over the last couple of years and huge operation. Famous for its telenovelas, of course, which do sell internationally. The amount of viewing time is incredible. Shows like Brazil Avenue, which has been going for seven or eight years now, probably billions of hours of viewership. The interesting thing with Brazil as well, again, it's a pay TV market. So a lot of the income is coming from pay TV, but increasingly shifting to subscriptions. So you've got Netflix, which has done quite a lot there. 3%, I think, was its first Brazilian original. And since then, it's sort of kept ratcheting that up. There's been a real shift and has been probably before the curve internationally around the world for YouTube and sort of pushing and viewership on that front. I think Brazil was there very early on and its viewers sort of shifted across to YouTube and other similar sorts of sites to watch content. And that's certainly been increasing as well.
So a lot of people in Brazil are watching content on their handsets?
Yeah. Mobile viewing is huge. Companies like Globo, I think, there's Record TV, companies like that. Sort of incumbent broadcasters are having to adapt to this whole new wave of viewers who are coming, the younger demographics coming through. And it's a bit of a transition, I think. You're kind of reliant on the advertising market being buoyant and the macroeconomic market being buoyant as well. So all of those factors go into what's going on in Brazil.
All right, that's Brazil. What about at number eight?
At number eight, we've got India with 17.8 billion in revenue. India is, fascinating market. Huge, obviously, on the population front. Average revenue per user, what they call ARPU, is relatively low on the streaming side of things. So it's been one of those markets that the US streamers certainly looked to initially. It added to their subscriber totals. And so when you were seeing sort of Disney, especially Disney Plus, did a deal with Hotstar. Disney Plus Hotstar soared because there were lots of subscribers, but not a huge amount of revenue coming in from those subscribers. The amount, the subscription levels were fairly low. So there's been a bit of a shift more recently, I think it's fair to say, with Disney looking to sell off part of its Hotstar partnership. You've got companies like Paramount still there. You've got Viacom18 there. So there's a real interest in, local scripted is huge. And obviously, India is home to Bollywood, which I think, produces more content, more feature content than Hollywood. So it's a massive market, huge amounts of production expertise, but it's how to monetize that, especially for companies like Netflix and Prime Video, Amazon Prime Video. Those guys, they're still trying to probably work out how they can, effectively monetize all their subscribers. There might be billions of them, but it's just how much they can charge them.
Yeah, they're not used to those low margins and high numbers of population, are they? It doesn't really work with their model.
It's a different sort of take. I mean, we saw that with Disney Plus when it sold the cricket rights to a rival streamer, and people just disengaged and cancelled subscriptions. So it's a really tough, really competitive market out there. But again, like, huge amounts of creativity. And we've seen some shows popping. Sacred Games, for example, Netflix, an early Netflix show, did quite well. But I think it's fair to say there should be much more to come, because the expertise of those producers there and the talent there, there's great storytelling capabilities. It's still taking perhaps some time to come through to international eyeballs.
Yeah, and it's worth saying there's lots of different regions and lots of different cultures within India. So you can't just look at India as one territory, essentially. It's obviously, I think, 8 or 9 different regions and languages.
Different languages and cultures. Yeah, I think that really plays into it. And different sensibilities and certainly the different languages, I think, plays into sort of what the streamers and what the pay TV guys can produce and where it will sell to.
Okay, who have we got at number 7?
At number 7, we've got France with 18.8 billion in annual revenue. France is a fascinating country. It's well known, on especially in European circles, has a huge feature industry. The film industry there has, I think it's probably the first, if we're looking back 100 years or so. It's evolved into, I think it's probably fair to say, quite a protected industry, including the TV side now. So we've seen its government has tried to protect local productions, French language productions. Through the streaming sort of boom over the last couple of years, that caused perhaps some teething problems for some companies looking to sort of set up shop in France. So there are quotas in terms of how much French language programming and domestic programming has to be produced. I think probably it's fair to say now that perhaps protection is coming back and is actually being a bit of a positive, because the market didn't boom quite to the same extent as it did in some other countries, because the streamers didn't go in too hard in France. And now they have to keep up their quotas. So there's a ring fence around some of the shows that those guys are producing there. If they want to keep offering their service in France, they need to keep producing. So we've got Netflix, Amazon Prime Video, all the usual suspects operating in France. But on the broadcast side, we've also got Canal Plus, huge pay TV operator, France Télévisions, obviously, as well, which does lots of co-productions. It's a co-production partner on Death in Paradise, for example, shows like that. And it's also exporting lots of content as well. Big production industry, Banijay, companies like that, obviously, have set up in France. We've seen Nguyen do really well out of France. Quite a lot of the big production groups that we've seen sort of explode onto the international circuit originated in France. And we're seeing some of those smaller companies now, Federation, for example, Studios, growing quite nicely. And again, that comes from a sort of a fairly, local base in France that they've now managed to expand into.
So the French market is starting to look more global and international, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. If we look at, you can look at Unifrance and documentary sort of side of business. They've got some interesting broadcasters like Arte, so pan-country, I guess. So it's a French and German broadcaster that's doing some interesting stuff. And I think the market in general in France is doing okay. It's a challenging time. But if we look at sort of the big European markets, are quite well positioned as the demand for sort of really high-end, expensive programming from the streamers declines a little bit. European producers, including those in France, are quite well positioned to take up some of that slack and produce really high quality content, but not at such quite a high price point.
Okay. All right. So how about number 6? Who have we got at number 6?
Number 6. So we've got Canada at 19.5 billion. Canada is it's the Great White North. It's obviously well positioned in terms of its neighbour to the south. I won't call it its big brother because I don't want to get any notes in the post, but it's a big production hub for lots of US producers, so it can produce very cost efficiently. Again, it's got some big local players, so we've got sort of CBC there, which is the big national broadcaster operating across the country, and there's also obviously the French language part of Canada, which again is protected to some extent, and they produce a certain amount of programming, get a certain amount of funding. So that is, a really sort of vital part of the whole ecosystem as well. What we're seeing as well, obviously, especially over the past sort of 5 or 7 years, we've seen the streamers looking to Canada as a place to produce to some extent. That's caused perhaps some issues with producers there becoming producers for hire, essentially. So there's been some moves by the government to try and ring fence that a little bit and try and help, or trying to ensure that the streamers are actually investing in local productions as well, as opposed to just saying, you know, produce this in Canada and we'll get some savings on it compared to if we shot it in LA or wherever it might be.
Yeah. And those savings are made up by tax credits, which can be up to 40%, even maybe a little bit more in some regions of Canada.
Yeah. Yeah. Canada's got a really strong tax credit system, and it's worth putting into context with, the Canadian tax credit system, you know, is competing with lots of other countries in the world as well. Each country wants to draw those production revenues into their economy. So there's a battle going on there. So they have to remain competitive on that front.
And Canada's well known for hits and comedies that have traveled internationally as well. It's a really real strong hotbed of factual, but also scripted content as well.
Completely. Yeah, we've seen sort of shows like Letterkenny, and it's quite a fertile environment to allow some of those shows to grow. But it does, I mean, it faces the huge amount of content coming out of the US, and there's lots of content that is on Canadian TVs. A lot of it is coming from the States. There's always that sort of that attempt to sort of push back. But there's some really interesting stuff as well, more recently coming out of sort of the indigenous parts of Canada as well. So some local, voices that we perhaps haven't heard from so much. And that's cutting through, I think. And hopefully, we'll continue to grow.
Okay. Well, we're into the top five now, Richard. Who's at number five?
Number five, we've got Germany with 29 billion. So, Germany is, a really intriguing market. Big population, huge history of TV, obviously, as well. It's got some incumbent broadcasters. It's got a big national broadcast set up as well. We've got broadcasters like ARD operating across the country. But then we've also got commercial operators, ProSieben and ZDF. And those guys are, competing with license feedbacked broadcasters as well. It's fair to say the last couple of years have been really tough for the German commercial market. The ads market in Germany has been tricky. That has impacted, I think, growth and expansion. There's a real push to get viewers across to their own streaming services. But then we've also seen, the streamers are doing lots of stuff there. So we've seen Netflix, it had a successful show called Dark, and Prime Video is there. All the normal guys are there operating, and that's again creating a lot of competition for incumbents. There's still some really interesting scripted shows that are getting produced out there. Long running soap series, for example, still do really well. So I think it's the German market is attempting to try and straddle perhaps the older viewers who are watching some of that content, while also enticing in the younger viewers who would perhaps more readily go to Netflix or to one of the streamers or to YouTube. Or watch something on social media. And that battle is certainly being felt there.
And traditionally we've seen Germany importing a lot of content, particularly from the big American studios. But ProSieben recently made an announcement that they were stopping their output deals, weren't they? So that's a real sort of sense of the market at the moment. It's, they're not committing to those big, expensive output deals. They're going to real focus on local production, presumably, and other perhaps cheaper programming options.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. I'm not sure it was a huge surprise for the industry that they decided not to go ahead with that, with keeping all of those shows, because it is such an investment and because the market's been so soft. It's a sign of the times, I think. And there is, I mean, we've seen it in the Nordics, we've seen it in lots of countries where there's a shift towards local production. People are, the US output deals aren't being struck in the same way that they were. And if you're a German commercial broadcaster, then if you're an RTL group or someone like that, you're looking to keep your content costs as low as possible in a challenging market.
Yeah, and I suppose to be more reactive to what's going to be even more turbulence going forward, they need to be much more agile rather than locked into these long-term expensive deals. It's interesting that Germany is actually a third bigger than Canada, so we're really starting to get into the countries now that are really making up the core of the global TV industry. So how about number four?
At number four, Justin, we got the UK with 30 billion. So the UK is it's a big exporter of programming, obviously, but in terms of its national landscape, you've got the BBC as the the national broadcaster, of course, so very well known internationally. And then we've got ITV and Channel 4 and Channel 5. So those guys are on the linear side of things, but also obviously pushing across to their own on-demand operations as well. And then you've got the pay TV operator, what used to be pay TV operators, Sky, etc. The market is, I mean, as you said at the top of the show, it's a challenging market, I think, in the UK at the moment. We're seeing a real shift in sort of advertising, especially shifting away from TV in what we would describe as traditional TV. And that has caused some ripples for companies like ITV, Channel 4's, really felt the brunt of that. And that's all fed through to the production sector. But at the same time, we're seeing huge amounts of money spent by the streamers. So I think it's fair to say the last 6 months, 12 months, we've seen the streamers pull back on their international spends. The UK probably is feeling that a bit, but not to the same extent. So Netflix is still producing hundreds of millions. Even companies like Paramount, which has said it's not going to produce internationally, is still actually producing via its UK operation. So there's still a lot of money going into the UK. And there's also some interesting developments in terms of the sort of the size of the market is doing quite well because it is positioned to sell its shows internationally. So in the same way, when we talk about the US later, they've got cut through. If you're selling UK shows, they tend to sell quite well, and that means that there's more money coming into the market, ultimately the production market, and that means you can produce more. So that sort of cyclical arrangement is doing quite well. But it's certainly, in terms of the market, the landscape, it has suffered over the last 12 to 18 months, following the COVID boom, really, and as all those streamers have sort of slightly shut down on what they were spending before.
And Sky still being propped up by football, pretty much, we would say, for another few years. New deal just being cut a few weeks ago.
Yeah, Sky, and it's HBO deal as well with Warner Bros. Discovery. A lot of the shows that you're seeing advertised on Sky still derive either, as you say, is either football or sport related. Or a HBO show. So that will be an interesting one to watch. That deal comes up in 2025. We haven't yet seen Warner Bros. Discovery launch its streamer in the UK because of that deal. So it'll come down to whether or not David Zaslav thinks he can get more money by launching his own streamer in the UK and taking those shows away from Sky, or potentially doing some sort of probably partnership. I suspect that's where it might end up. And you might see a Max-branded sort of area within the Sky ecosystem. And then everyone probably will stay happy. But yeah, that's certainly one to watch. And it will be an interesting time.
Well, it's interesting that the UK is only at number four. Because I maybe assumed that the UK would be slightly higher up the chart. But who's at number three then?
We've got Japan with $35 billion worth of annual revenue. So Japan is quite an insular market, really. It's got a pay TV sector, but a lot of the shows it's producing are for its domestic market. Its viewers, that's the kind of show they want. You've got a really big national broadcaster in NHK. So they're increasingly doing international sales. They're pushing their international sales, but a lot of the content that is getting produced there is internal. You've got, the streamers are doing quite well there. So they're growing. We've had some operators. Hulu initially launched in Japan, and there is still a Hulu in Japan, but it's not the Hulu that's owned by Disney, but that's where it derived from ultimately. And it's an interesting sort of market. One of the big exports for Japan is anime. That is one area where it's done really well. But in terms of, the domestic sort of sector, we've got companies, as I say, NHK, TBS, really good, well-grounded production companies as well. And that's all feeding into that sort of, that 35 billion figure.
All right. So we're up to the top two. Who's at number two?
So at number two, we are into the hundreds of billion now. So we've got China with 108 billion annual revenue. So China is one of those markets I think everyone's been looking to get into for probably at least the last decade, probably more. It's quite a heavily regulated market. So we've got some major sort of players. We've got a national broadcaster in CCTV. We've also got some streamers, which have derived from the big internet players, similar to the rest of the world. In China, we have some of the big, the big internet companies have launched their own streamers. So we've got iQIYI. We've got Tencent Video as well, which has done very well. These guys have done, they've used their internet platforms to then roll out their own streaming services. Lots of content being commissioned, it is very insular. So there's none of the international streamers operating within China. So that left the market open. And these guys have really sort of infiltrated and, yeah, taken over the whole market and have grown rapidly. There's some interesting other companies. I mean, we've got a regional broadcaster called Hunan TV. It's growing. It's got a service called Mango, which has done quite well. And the way that the market is sort of shifting is there's more competition on some of those incumbents. So, yeah, we've got IGI, Tencent and Youku, those sort of the incumbent guys. Now there is more competition against some of those operators. But in terms of sort of shows that are traveling, there's not a huge amount of stuff coming out of China to the international market compared to perhaps what there should be. And there's not a huge amount going in either. But there's some co-productions. Certainly we've seen with CCTV's been interested in factual co-productions. It's been doing that for quite a long time with companies like BBC Studios. So you see a lot of the natural history shows will have CCTV on board. And CCTV's launched its own streaming service as well. So yeah, that market is, everyone's desperate to get into it. Quite how you get into it is another question. You need a local player. So we've seen some interesting moves with companies like Beach House Pictures, which Fremantle recently acquired. They've got a local office within China, and so they're able to produce for China and for Chinese companies. But yeah, in terms of sort of international guys looking to get involved in China, it's always about those regional, you need someone within the country and well set up.
You have to navigate that system, don't you? You've got to partner with somebody, yeah, and share that IP.
Yeah, yeah, completely.
Okay, well, China, nearly three times as big as Japan, and certainly three times as big as the UK market. So number one, not a massive surprise, but tell us about the US in terms of how that market is doing and the size of that market.
Yep. So yeah, not a huge surprise. I mean, the US is, as we all know, it's the dominant force in the global industry. So it's at $300 billion annual revenue. So it's a fair proportion of the roughly $750 billion total across the world. You've got your big studios, Disney, of course. You've got Warner Bros. Discovery. You've got NBC Universal. And we've got Fox as well and Sony Pictures Television. So those are studios. Most of them have got streamers as well. So with Disney, we've got Disney Plus. Warner Bros. Discovery, we've got Max. NBCU's got its Peacock service. And Fox has also got its streaming services in Tubi, which is an interesting AVOD-supported platform as well. The one outlier is Sony Pictures Television, which has stayed out of the streaming wars for now and seems to be doing quite well following that move. And the other three are, yeah, they're certainly fighting, I think, for their lives, it's fair to say. Disney, I think, probably is fairly well placed just because it's sheer heft and it's diversified revenue streams. Paramount and Warner Bros. Discovery are still fighting. Obviously, combination of Warner Bros. And Discovery, and still trying to work through just how it's going to make streaming pay and the feature business as well, which was also hit by COVID. Paramount, as we know, is subject. I think everyone at some point they think it's probably going to sell to someone, but just who will, time will tell on how that all falls out. But the pullback on international spend, there was a race for subscribers over the last 3 or 4 years. 18 months ago, that sort of shifted completely. Actually, the Wall Street decided they wanted profits. They didn't want to see how many subscribers you had. They wanted to see how much profit you were making. And streaming is not as profitable as pay TV. And that is what's really, pay TV fueled the market over the last 30, 40 years, helped it mushroom into such a huge industry. People even now are paying sort of $90, $100 a month for their pay TV packages in the States. That's $1,100 per month, per year, sorry, for the cable operators. And yet you're seeing those cord cutters are really trimming back on that. And so we've seen, I think over the last 15 years or so, we've seen the pay TV market sort of halve almost in terms of the total penetration across the country. So that's provided a real challenge for some of those big operators, how they're going to make up that amount of money that they've lost to pay TV. Streaming, they hope, is the answer. But in the race for subscribers, you saw essentially revenue coming second to subscriber growth, and that's now coming back to bite everybody. So, yeah, it'll be a fascinating few years, I think, for, in terms of sort of how that market sort of, yeah, adapts and evolves to the whims and the demands of Wall Street and what it wants, and how long I think ultimately is prepared to wait for profits to come.
And we've seen the growth of FAST in the States, you know, over the last 5 years, which has been the biggest new development, I think, other than obviously streaming and AVOD and SVOD. But when it comes to FAST, that really has turned into its own, you know, really healthy sector, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think FAST is a big hope for lots of operators. It's a bit of a, I mean, it's in the US, it's a completely different beast, I think, to the rest of the world. FAST in the US has certainly got a good position, and it's, I think everyone thinks it's just going to keep growing. Perhaps not at the rate that it was, but it really has, yeah, it's mushroomed and exploded. And it's providing opportunities to some players, perhaps, you know, Paramount and Pluto TV, for example, have done well there. We've seen some really, yeah, interesting moves in terms of sort of how FAST is being consumed by viewers. The advertising market seems to be getting on board with it. I think there's still questions over just how much it's going to get on board with FAST. But it's certainly, yeah, it's a real growth opportunity for especially rights holders. And it also provides an opportunity for companies not necessarily based in the States. You don't have to be based in the States to launch a, you know, a US-based FAST channel. So I think there's, yeah, that's certainly a revenue growth opportunity. Time will tell over just, you know, how much it's going to provide for the industry as a whole. And it's whether or not the rate of decline of pay TV and cable operator in cable subscriptions, that is slowing inevitably because lots of people are already cancelled. We've got a really interesting development with the sports streamer, which is seeing Warner Bros. And Fox and Disney come together through ESPN. They're all coming together to launch a single streaming destination. That will be fascinating to see how that affects the pay TV market, perhaps, because that has kind of been propped up to some extent by sports. We've got NBC Universal with Peacock trying to make moves on that. It recently had some NFL games, and it provided them only via Peacock. So it's a really dynamic market, moving quickly, but yeah, challenging as well at the same time.
As we all know, if America sneezes, we all catch a cold, and that's pretty much what's going on now in the global TV industry. So that's the US, nearly half of the revenue of the global TV industry market as a whole, if anybody needed reminding of that. So there are a few other notable countries that you're going to mention, Richard, as well. Australia is one of those. So, you know, again, a unique market, but, you know, still, you know, just sits outside the top 10 there, doesn't it?
Yeah, Australia's really interesting. It's, I mean, obviously English language speaking. It's got a fairly strong free TV sector. It's got a national broadcast with SBS. It's got the ABC as well, obviously those two. But then it's also got Network 10, which is owned by Paramount. It's got domestic streaming services with Stan. It's also got Netflix and all of the usual guys ploughing money in as well to some extent. It's also got a lot of production tax credits as well. So production, it's got Screen Australia sort of fighting to get productions down under, try and pull in, again, as we were talking about before, some of that production revenue. And it's, yeah, it offers landscapes, obviously, etc. And I think the way that market is going, it will be one to watch as well. Again, I mean, it's not that dissimilar to the States in terms of sort of, not in terms of size, obviously, it's about 11 billion. But in terms of the way that it's navigating the shift to streaming and making sure that it tries to support some of those local productions and pulling in that money from international streamers, there's quite a lot of co-production as well going on there. So yeah, one to watch.
Yeah, and a very strong government support for the industry there as well. And Spain is another one that you've highlighted.
Yeah, Spain is, yeah, we were about 8 billion on annual revenue for Spain. But again, really interesting. I mean, this is probably the last 3 or 4 years we've seen Spanish language shows increasingly traveling. I mean, it's still at relatively low levels, but it's increasing quite quickly. And it's, again, one of those stories where if you have a show a bit like Korean content, which is also worth mentioning, you know, Korean content and Spanish content, you get one, two shows that kind of cut through, and suddenly everybody's actually really interested in seeing what else is coming from those countries. I think Spain is an example of that, where, you know, we had Casa de Papel through Netflix that ignited an international interest in Spanish drama through Netflix sending it everywhere. And we've seen increasing amounts of money going into sort of trying to, you know, support Spanish exports, Spanish language exports. And there's co-productions going on with countries in Latin America as well, and US Hispanic guys doing, you know, shows together. So there's lots of sort of synergies there that you can, there's a real interest in sort of increasing that partnership.
And the Hispanic market in the US alone is around about 70 million. So it's a, you know, so a huge market there for the Spanish industry to export.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. Yeah. And growing. And again, I mean, low, you know, it's a really dynamic industry. You know, you've got some really, some fantastic producers in Spain, writers, creators, partnering with some of the guys, you know, the Mexican, lots of interesting stuff going on in Mexico, Colombia, lots of telenovela stuff as well, going back to what we were talking about before. So there's lots of sort of, yeah, interesting, yeah, dynamics there at play that I think we're going to increasingly see more partnerships occurring. And I think probably more interest in Spanish language shows across the board.
And finally, no roundup of the top countries in the global TV industry would be complete without talking about the Netherlands, and in terms of a country that punches way above its weight in terms of formats and influence that it has on the international market. The Netherlands is around about 5 billion in terms of value for the market.
Yeah, we've seen the Netherlands is huge, obviously on the format front, especially John de Mol obviously really sort of set that fire going there, and it's been burning ever since, growing, mushrooming and doing really well. We've seen shows like Big Brother, obviously originating from there 2 decades ago, but since then his Talpa got bought by ITV Studios. We've seen shows like The Voice, etc. They've done really well internationally. It's a fairly small, relatively small industry on the global landscape, but it's quite open-minded in terms of the shows that they're prepared to watch and engage with. And I think at the moment, I mean, there's an interesting sort of way that, that John de Mol's current company in Talpa, he's got networks, so he's got a channel system essentially, so he can put formats onto that channel, onto those channels, and then sort of not test it but see how they do, and then perhaps they can hit the international markets. And those, yeah, they, I think Dutch formats are still, they're famous around the world because they are normally a little bit unusual. You know, we've seen The Traitors do really well. These are, yeah, unusual into innovative ideas that get given the chance generally because the commissioners there are a little bit more friendly to risk perhaps than some markets. And if you can ignite a few of those, then yeah, you're doing quite well. And again, it's to do with cut through and what's come before it. So the Dutch market is quite well positioned on that front.
Richard, thank you so much for joining me this week. It's really fascinating to give us that whistle-stop tour of the top 10 markets in the international TV industry. Thanks a lot and all the best at TVI.
Thank you very much. Absolute pleasure.
Well, that's about it for this week's show. As ever, thanks a lot for listening. You can check out video versions of all of our recent shows on our YouTube channel, Telecast TV. Just click on the link in the episode description to subscribe or search Telecast TV on YouTube. Telecast was produced by Spirit Studios. We'll be back next week with another Telecast when our guest is actor, comedian and now indie boss, Omid Jalili. Until then, stay safe.